Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to A Better Love. I'm your host, Dr. Greg. I'm joined today by Dr. Rebecca Payne to talk about attachment styles, mixed messages and attachment styles. Dr. Payne, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
I'm excited to have you here. And actually, there's a short story here I want to share with our audience that you and I actually met in Boston when you were interning at the Boston Vet Center, right?
Correct. It was a great experience.
Well, that's the only thing I need to hear. It was a great experience. It was great having you. You know, Becca is the one and only doctoral level supervisee I've ever had in my existence. Probably the last one, maybe. I think I've shared that with you, right? But excited that you actually moved to California. You're in Santa Monica now, and so we get to do this show. Very cool.
Yeah, it's great.
What are your thoughts in general about attachment styles and why they're important for us to know?
So I initially started hearing about attachment styles. I think it started to come up when I was just talking with my friends and they're dating and like trying to navigate like, oh, does this guy like me or is he just avoidant? And I was like, wait, sorry, what did you say? Avoidant? And then I started to look into it and started to notice different attachment styles all around me in my dating life, in my friend's dating life. Noticing like an attachment dynamic between my parents, just in all relationships, you can kind of see it. Relationships are something that affects all of us all of the time. So
all of the time. And especially those of us who are trying to be in love, fall in love, stay in love, to know about this attachment thing is very important. So last week, Becca, I was talking about on the show, a general avoidance, you know, and that seeps into attachment style stuff too, but just in general, there are lots of folks who are just avoidant of uncomfortable things, challenging things. Love can be one of those things. So there is an attachment style described as an avoidant attachment style. But what are the main attachment styles that we're wanting to be aware of in general?
I guess there are technically four. There is avoidant attachment. There's anxious attachment. There's secure attachment and disorganized attachment, which is kind of the wild card that.
I would say it would be a wild card, yes.
Yeah.
And of all those attachment styles at A Better Love Project, we're happy that in general, secure attachment styles end up actually being the majority, 66% actually, Becca, which I don't know if you think is high or not, because when you look at and you listen to the podcast, you're watching the dating stuff on TikTok or whatever else, it seems like everybody has an insecure attachment style. That's the impression that I think I get when I see stuff online. What's your sense of that?
100% agree. Also heard that statistic. I don't know who these secure people are or where you find them, but yeah, it seems like there are a lot of people with insecure attachment styles. And it could be partly that the dating pool is more saturated with people with insecure attachment styles.
Oh shit, we're dropping some hypotheses here. Now I haven't heard that. But I almost want, my inclination is yes, that may be true. Maybe, I don't know, but later in life.
I mean, if you have a secure attachment style, you get into a healthy relationship pretty quickly and it stays healthy. Easier. Why leave it?
Yeah. In general, I would say the interesting thing now I'm curious about is like, if we were to look at divorce statistics, if we actually have any data to suggest what their particular attachment styles are. But so there are a lot of people, I don't know where they are in general either. I mean, and we may think that we are secure and maybe we actually have some things that are a little more insecure, but in general, how is it that we come to develop an insecure attachment style or secure attachment style? That's in childhood, right, Becca?
Yeah. So the hypothesis is it stems like a lot of things from your relationship with your parents and the way that you interact with them. And so it's thought that the insecure attachment styles come from a response to inconsistent attention from your parent. So what that means is it could be the same type of behavior that leads to different types of insecure attachment. But essentially, when you don't know when your parent is going to come back and give you attention and you're not completely secure in that, people or children will typically respond by either becoming very, very anxious about this. And you can see this if you watch videos of children and their parents. an anxious child will stay anxious even after their parent comes back. And they will continue to hold a grudge against their parent for leaving. And they will constantly be looking to make sure that their parent is not going to leave again. Whereas an avoidant child will act as though they haven't even noticed that their parent has left. And they will ignore the fact that their parent comes back. But they have done, they've looked at the physiological symptoms that that child is experiencing. And an avoidant child is having the same level of an anxious reaction as the anxious child. They're just responding and behaving differently.
That's a huge point to make, that and something definitely that our listeners, viewers will want to pay attention to, how we're actually experiencing these ruptures, maybe in conflict, particularly when this anxious avoidant stuff comes up, and like what's actually going on physiologically with us during that time. So let's definitely come back to that. But everybody's feeling something. And the disorganized attachment style, God bless those folks. You know what I mean? Because you got a little bit of both.
It's pretty much just a bit of both. And it seems like it's called disorganized because there isn't always a rhyme or reason to it.
Yeah. And of all the things, one of the things that I want to make sure the folks understand today, Becca, is that attachment styles are not necessarily not deterministic. Like these things are malleable and we can shift and change. I'm guessing the disorganized attachment style, if you don't know how to correct for or adjust to the particular style, it's going to be a little bit more difficult, don't you think?
I would imagine so. I think somebody with a disorganized attachment style, like all insecure attachment styles, will do best with someone that's securely attached.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, there's work to be done there.
Absolutely. And when we find out where all the securely attached people are in the world, we'll tell you, dear listeners. So what is a very common thing? You mentioned something already, but maybe give our listeners a couple of examples here. I'll try to help as well, of an anxious attachment style in dating or in relationships. Like, what's the first thing that you've seen in, you know, working with your clients or elsewhere?
Somebody with an anxious attachment style, and some of you guys might have experienced this yourself or experienced this with your partner, notice that your partner is behaving this way, but someone who's anxious, they'll be completely preoccupied with the relationship. It'll be something that's on their mind constantly. They'll be checking their phone all the time. Like, has he texted me back yet? Has he texted me back yet? Or has she texted me back yet? Almost becomes like an obsession, and they have difficulty concentrating on anything else. It's just always on their mind, and they'll be anxious until they hear from their partner.
One of the ways that comes up often, and with my clients, many, many clients, by the way, and some often people think like they're the only ones going through this, which is, you know, but reaching out, let's say in the middle of the day or something, to a partner who's at work, you both at work and you're texting and reaching out. And now like the time that it takes from that moment to whenever it is that you've actually communicated with the person, and the anxiety may be just ratcheting up the whole time, in a sort of an extreme version of what we're talking about right now for illustrative purposes. But so that's anxious. That makes sense. And that kind of corresponds kind of how you described that stuff developing in childhood. You're looking for the responsivity to your bid, essentially, whether it's a text message or not.
It's kind of like, whereas somebody with a secure attachment might, if somebody says, I love you, they can accept that knowledge and feel comfortable with that. Someone with an anxious attachment style will wake up every morning and be like, okay, but do you still love me? Okay, what if I do this? Do you love me now? Okay, but I know, but you just like looked at that girl. Like, does that mean that you don't love me anymore? It's like they just struggle to trust that the object permanence of the situation. They just struggle to trust that their partner still feels the same way.
From day to day, week to week, and whatever. Now let's talk about this avoidant thing, and with the premise here that you have a couple, and many, many couples are either distinctly different in terms of their attachment style, or they're just somewhere on that spectrum, a little bit more avoidant versus a little bit more anxious. What are some examples of the avoidant attachment style in relationships and dating?
Well, so an avoidant is almost the opposite of an anxious, and you would think that it would go horribly wrong when these two people hook up, and it usually does. But and someone who's avoidant doesn't think about their partner all the time. It won't even occur to them. They'll go for 3 days and not even realize that they haven't been in touch with their partner, and then kind of be like, oh shoot, I should probably text her. Meanwhile, the anxious partner is waiting with bated breath to hear back from them. They're not necessarily trying to be mean or trying to be dismissive of this person, but sometimes they don't think about it. On the flip side though, there are specific things that an avoidant will do subconsciously to keep partners at arm's length. I know, for example, one avoidant strategy is they'll idealize a past partner that when they were with, they didn't even really want to be with, and they probably pushed away that partner. But then to their current partner, they'll talk about how great that one ex is, and she was the one that got away. So it's just, there are different things that they do, but they're always trying to keep their own independence in their personal space.
And the idea is that I would want to highlight too, is that there's, going back to your original point about the physiological response. So if there's an approach from a partner who's experiencing anxiety, right, there is still that anxious response to the desire for connection or intimacy, perhaps. And that's their adaptation, is to just check out or whatever. And it comes up in conflict as well, particularly for couples who are been together for a little while. And the idea there is I don't know if you've seen this or, but there's an approach to try to address some kind of conflict issue, tension point. Maybe there's, because let's just say in this dynamic that we're talking about, there's a lot of intense emotion, like maybe strong, vulnerable emotions, or maybe even anger, frustration, other things. And the avoidant attachment style, that's a lot, in other words, for someone who is not necessarily super comfortable with emotions, period, or strong ones. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. An avoidant does not want to talk about emotions. That is probably an avoidant's least favorite activity. They just kind of want to, an avoidant is typically not going to be the one that says hey, let's discuss where this relationship is going. They're kind of well, no, let's just, things seem to be going pretty well. Why do we have to talk about it?
Let's not rock the boat. But the boat is already rocking.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I it's interesting because, Becca, as you're talking, they folks who are maybe a little bit more avoidant, I wonder to the extent that they're connected as well to the physiological response that they're having or not.
Yeah.
If they knew that they were actually stressing out, maybe they would approach it differently.
Yeah. I think that in my experience, avoidants are much less inclined to change their attachment style or to want to change their attachment style than an anxiously attached person. And part of that is because avoidants have repressed, even though they're still experiencing the same physiological symptoms, they've repressed this desire so deeply that they don't even notice that it's there. As opposed to someone who's anxious, they're practically in agony over this relationship and where it's going. And okay, but what if I never meet someone else? It's constant fear of theirs.
So you have those two people together now. What is it that we're telling our audience about their prospects? I would like us to say a significant amount of hope, because I have clients who are in this situation right now, Becca, but with a significant amount of hope that this can actually change, even if you're not right. Maybe ideally you land one of these 66% secure people, but what is it that we need, or we should be encouraging folks to be paying attention to, or maybe that's part of it in the first place? What's the strategy for folks to be following here? What's the first thing that pops up in your mind?
Like the answer to most things in psychology is it depends.
Yeah.
To what extent this one person is anxious and to what extent one person is avoidant and what the other factors there are. Somebody that is anxious will become more anxious when they're with somebody that's avoidant and vice versa. The secure kind of has a way of balancing that, but somebody who could appear totally secure in most relationships, if they're with an avoidant, could all of a sudden find themselves having an anxious attachment style.
Oh shit. See, I believe you when I hear you say that, you know what I mean? Because those of you who are out there, maybe you're used to dating secure or being with someone who is secure. It's a little less intense. You know what I mean? There's a little less work involved because there's more of a reciprocity, a mutual responding effectively to bids, which let me just say, put that out there in general as a framework here, that if the attachment issue stems from responsivity in childhood, that's maybe one thing we want to look at how I'm responding to my partner, and maybe finding that we're a little bit more anxious if we're with somebody who's avoidant, you know, and that vice versa, whatever. So awareness, would you say awareness is as in all things psychology also? Yes, right.
Exactly. Awareness. Also, maybe if you're avoidant and you notice that your partner is behaving in an anxious way, noticing what you're doing that's causing that anxiety in your partner. This dynamic isn't particularly pleasant for either party. It leads to bickering, come home and your partner's upset at you, and then whole like, what's wrong? And they'll say nothing. And then like that whole back and forth, nobody really wants to be in that. But yeah, it's a cycle that people can get trapped in.
Then it's just a signal to say, wait, hold on a second. We need to slow this process down. What's happening right now, particularly in conflict?
Yes.
And that's usually where I'm encountering and making adjustments with couples.
Absolutely.
Slowing things down, right?
Yeah. Noticing where you're at. Because the thing is, like, once your emotions become elevated past a certain point, there's no productive conversation that can happen.
Yeah.
You guys both need to be at a reasonable level in order to communicate effectively.
When I'm doing Gottman method couples therapy, and I know because I trained you how to do this couples therapy, yeah, but putting pulse oximeters on my clients so that everybody is aware that their heart rate is going above 100, let's say, and that they're flooded. The interesting thing, Becca, and it's not surprising given what we're talking about here, but one of the four horsemen of the apocalypse in Dr. John and Julie Gottman's method of couples therapy is stonewalling. And stonewalling is a, as we know, is a maladaption. And it's a way of dealing with flooding, the feeling. And what is it? It's, you know, eyes rolling or like tuning out.
Being non-responsive to your partner. I mean, I think the most literal sense, being a stone wall.
That's going to lead to separation, divorce. And the antidote to that is self-soothing. So the third thing I'm going to say in general for folks where there is an anxious and an avoidant, that both people actually are like focusing on regulating their affect, being aware of their affect, regulating their affect more effectively in the moment. And both people, not just the avoidant saying, oh, well, this person's just out of control over here, feeling all these things. But yeah, both people see the value in that, like even just taking 20 minutes. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's really easy for an avoidant to kind of write off the anxious behavior as crazy or like, oh, she's at it again, he's at it again. Mm-hmm. And knowing, I mean, maybe they do, maybe they don't know full well that they've triggered that meltdown. My parents, for example, have a great relationship, but they also, there is a dynamic of anxiousness and avoidance.
Sure.
That I see. My dad will, I've seen him just do things that he knows will set my mom off and then kind of throw his hands up and be like, I can't believe that happened.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is, Becca, that it's whether it's known or not in the moment, there's definitely particularly for the person experiencing bids for their attention, affection, and all the other things, that there's a narrative that sometimes develops with negative sentiment override. And it's like, there's nothing I can do. I do everything. I say everything right. And there's nothing I can do. There she is, or he is, you know, crying and screaming at me and all the other things. And it becomes that. It's like, now it's that. It's not even about me or how I'm responding. It's like this person, like, this is what you're saying. This person is the problem, which is not the case. It's a relational thing. It's a relational thing. Yes. Two people, at least. What role does individual therapy actually play in attachment stuff, would you think, versus couples therapy? Should people go to individual therapy for this stuff?
I mean, I think that there is some benefit from individual therapy for all people, just recognizing your patterns and knowing the types of things you do. And it can sometimes, when you're with a partner, it can set off kind of a defensiveness, and your partner sitting there like, yeah, see, I told you, am I not right? Like, did we not, like, so just kind of taking that out of the equation and just having a one-on-one, getting another opinion from an objective party without your partner sitting there. Another thing, and this is maybe just for somebody that's not even in a relationship, but somebody who has a more anxious style that's single. One thing that I'll see a lot is that anxious styles will go for avoidance. And if they find themselves on a date with or courting someone that's secure, they'll say something like, oh, I didn't get those butterflies. There was no spark. Because they'll come to equate that feeling of nervousness and anxiety with love. And dating somebody that's secure can feel kind of boring.
There it is, ladies and gentlemen. You heard it right here at a Better Love Project. Secure people, sometimes it feels like it's boring.
Yeah, there's no drama.
And how do we get over that?
Well, that's just, it's something that you have to accept. Like, do you really want the drama? Do you really want the pain? Do you really want the crying? Or do you want to be happy and boring?
I was just talking about this the other day, Becca, in part because I was on a date with somebody who had said to me that they get bored with people easily, which I didn't take as a good sign. But in general, I think, particularly if you're single and getting yourself set up for something, because I talk a lot about long-term monogamous relationships here. It's basically what I'm trying to support. You're going to sometimes you're not going to be the most exciting person. Sometimes you're not going to be doing the most exciting things. And if there's not fighting and yelling and about something that relational angst, it's going to feel different.
It's going to totally feel different. Yeah. It can feel as though, well, maybe I'm not attracted to this person, because if I was, I would be thinking about them 24/7, but you don't have to think about them 24/7 because they're making you feel secure. So you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah. Well, I hope they're making me, but the thing about them, and let's just maybe, this is one of the last notes we'll make, is that in the secure attachment, there's an element of freedom with a sense of closeness, even in that freedom. So that person's on their mind, even though they're out doing other things, having fun, maybe friends, whatever else it is, hopefully stay, if they're secure, maybe they probably are doing a relatively good job at staying emotionally connected and regardless of how much freedom they're taking. But that's something we value, Becca, right? I mean, freedom, absolutely. The sense of freedom in relationship.
Yeah. You don't have to worry about, you're not worried about what your partner's out doing because there's a sense of trust and companionship, and that frees mental space in both of your minds to pursue other things and, focus on other interests. It doesn't have to be this obsession that's constantly distracting you or this thorn in your side if you're an avoidant.
Yeah. Either case, again, would be unpleasant. We cover so many important topics here around attachment. Becca, I really appreciate you stopping by the show today. It was an absolute pleasure to have you. Thanks so much for joining us, Becca, today.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
All right. Well, from our hearts to yours, love each other fiercely, and we'll talk to you soon. Peace.